Receiving this message. We are Ken Jennings and John Roderick. We speak to you from our present, which we can only assume is your distant past, the turbulent time that was the early 21st century.
Fearing the great cataclysm that will surely befall our civilization, we began this monumental reference of strange and obscure human knowledge. These recordings represent our attempt to compile and preserve wonders and esoterica that would otherwise be lost.
So whether you're listening from an advanced civilization or have just reinvented the technology to decrypt our transmissions, this is our legacy to you.
This is our time capsule. This is the Omnibus. You have accessed entry 1086.2CH2118, certificate number 52937, the Royal Anus of Louis XIV.
Have you been following the conspiracy theories about
yes,
Her Majesty, about anything, about how where escalator steps go when they go around the top?
Yes, they go under the earth to the and they're the secret escalator of the people that live in the center.
There's a cavern of goblins down there that melt them down and make new steps, and that's what comes out the bottom on the other side. I was thinking of the conspiracy. That's a good one. Mm-hmm. I was thinking about the conspiracy theories about Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II, how she never actually went to the moon. No, about how she's not.
I don't believe that for a second. There are photographs of her on the moon, Ken. You can see her shadow.
You can see her reflected in Buzz Aldrin's helmet. Mm-hmm. You can see the corgis.
Does this have to do with her son, Prince Andrew?
Not so much. Just the fact that she's due to health challenges, she's not been stepping back from public life.
You don't see her.
So recently on Twitter, I mean, there's the 70th anniversary, the Platinum Jubilee is... That would be, what, she was crowned and coronated?
She was coroninated.
She was crowninated in the summer of 1953, I think.
So we're 70.
So yeah, next year would be the 70th, the Platinum Jubilee.
Yeah. Nobody's celebrate her entire catalog, but yeah, I had some Silver Jubilee like teacups at some point.
Silver's what, 25?
Yeah.
So those are from like 1978.
Yeah.
Exciting.
They were, you know, there's even I think a Silver Jubilee, like Triumph motorcycle. I mean, they made a lot of stuff. They made a lot of hay out of her Silver Jubilee, but the Platinum one.
Is there like a little bust of her between the handlebars of the Triumph?
Oh, it's completely decked out with paintings and
corgis.
British flags, corgis, Burberry trench coats. But yeah, I think, I mean, she's the longest reigning monarch in UK history.
Yeah, no king or queen of England or Britain has ever had a platinum jubilee. And of course, you know, there were probably centuries of ones who didn't even live to be 70, much less.
There were centuries where they didn't live to be 17, let alone 70.
She was hospitalized back in October with a back sprain. And
that seems fishy. That's a back sprain.
The quote that circulated was that, you know, she's entered a new phase of her reign due to medical challenges, and you know the internet
the new
loved
phase
that
being dying.
I think the new phase, you know, the internet was like, the new phase is, you know, she's evolving into a different Pokemon.
Oh,
or
yeah.
Or she's going to emerge from some kind of a gelatinous egg, or
the internet is such a fun place. It's really a tragedy that I don't get to visit there more often.
But ever since then, I've seen speculation on Twitter and TikTok and the like that
wait a minute, you're on TikTok?
Oh, of course. Tumblr.
What do you
Twitch.
Do? What do you do on TikTok?
If it starts
TikTok?
With a T, John. If it has T and a short vowel, I am there.
I would like to see some physical confirmation that you are on TikTok. Show me one thing that proves that you're on TikTok.
Should I just do a series of TikTok dances for you right now?
Well, no, I wouldn't understand what they meant. But show me your phone. It's right there. Show me your TikTok account.
I'm not on TikTok. Are you kidding me?
Right. Okay, good.
My kids are.
I was worried.
My kids are. I'm a 1 degree removed from TikTok. Yeah. I'm in a TikTok household. I celebrate its whole catalog.
A lot of your friends are on TikTok.
Some of my best friends are TikTokers. You know, just suggesting that, you know, the Queen's Christmas message was an AI deep fake.
Right.
That there's been a huge cover up, that she's in a, you know, coma 30 stories beneath the Chancellery of the Exchequery or some made up building.
So you and I are generally pretty dubious of involved conspiracies.
Yeah.
But there is a level of plausible conspiracy.
There would be a soft landing if a monarch who'd been on the throne for almost 70 years started to have health challenges that were limiting her public persona and workload, right?
Yeah, I mean, that Anthony Bourdain documentary where the filmmaker deep faked his voice in a couple of places where he was reading aloud from something he'd obviously never taped. He was doing voiceovers that were, I don't know, some robot voice imitating him reading his texts or something.
Oh, yeah, the documentary.
And the documentarian defended it as like, that's, you know, artistic license, but... How,
if you had a sound alike doing it, you know, that's a thing. So
how would you, so there's that tricky realm of like, would Buckingham Palace have the Queen like send a text that they deep faked so her shaky voice didn't alarm people? I mean, it's very hard now to know where conspiracy ends and plausibility begins. If you had told me really anything that the Trump administration did before, if you'd come to me in 2015 and said, guess what the president's going to say in 2019?
And he'll do it like four times a day.
I would never have believed it. And now I guess we're post-satire.
And I guess the British Crown is an institution with historically even less transparency than the Trump administration, you know, or any other...
Right.
Conspiracy plagued organization you can think of. One conspiracy theory I've seen is that they will, even if she's hovering between life and death, they will hold off on the announcement until it's actually 70 years because nobody wants her to have a 69-year reign.
Oh, no.
The most unfortunate reign length.
And when is the actual moment?
Am I right that it was June 1953?
So June.
But not June of this year. Right? That would make it...
Oh, they're not going to deep fake her for a year and a half.
But I guess, hold on, the coronation is not the ascendance, right? When did she... is the Jubilee celebrated on the anniversary of the coronation in Westminster Abbey, or is it... No, it wouldn't be. It would be... Her reign begins on the day her father died, right? And George VI died the previous... February. She really put off that coronation.
I don't know that all that ascension stuff is really complicated. I don't think that you and I are in a position to say what the Order of the Garter says about when her reign actually begins. Because why even have the investiture ceremony if it isn't significant, if it just begins the day her dad dies?
So I guess that makes sense. They want her to, if they can somehow not announce the death until February, the conspiracy theory goes,
right,
we will never have to say the Queen had a 69-year reign.
69. When I was King Neptune, I was King Neptune 68.
Mm.
And I really, which, you know, has resonance.
Is it a Roman numeral?
Yeah.
You were King Neptune the LXXVIIth?
That's right. And I really, really... pleaded with them to just skip a year, please, and let me be King Neptune 69. And they said no.
I mean, like any King Neptune can be King Neptune 69 if he really puts his mind to it.
Yeah.
The amazing thing about Queen Elizabeth is that even though she's 1,000 years old and has the benefits of modern medicine to give us this unprecedented 70 or near 70 year reign
she's
on the British throne.
She gets transfusions of Keith Richards's blood.
She would still have to, she would have to survive on the throne. I mean, she doesn't have to stay on the throne. She's allowed to go for walks and get in her Land Rover. But she would have to live until like mid 2025 to hit the 72 and a half year mark, which is still a record, of Louis the 14th.
No kidding.
King of France from 1643 to 1715.
He was on the throne for 72
and a half years. So long that he was succeeded by his own great grandson, who was five.
I must have read that more than once, and I think I just blotted it out because it's so unreal.
Yeah, it seems like especially back then, you know, it seems like a special effect. They called him the Sun King, but right. That
here he comes.
That stood for Sun. You're old. He's not the longest reigning monarch, but of an independent sovereign state, yes. There are a bunch of, let's see, monarchs of Holy Roman Empire quasi-historical states like Lippe and Henneberg-Schleusingen. You know, they had kings that literally ruled for 78, 80 years. The all-time record.
Because they ruled from birth to death or from when they were 2 years old?
Let's see. Let's take, for example, Bernhard VII of Lippe. Who became the Lord of Lippe in August 1429.
That was one of my subsidiary titles under King Neptune.
But he was born the previous December. So he was a full 10, he was a 10-month old, but he was a pudgy tot
right.
By the time he took the throne. He wasn't any kind of mewling ex fetus.
No.
No, he was a proud and regal 10-month old. He could eat strained peas.
Uh-huh.
The all-time record, Sobuza II, the Swazi chief, the chief of Swaziland in southern Africa, unfortunately, you know, he ruled for almost 83 years, from 1899 to 1982. Unfortunately, most of that was under British colonial rule, so not a sovereign,
right?
In the same way that, you know, the king of Thailand, the 20th century prince of Liechtenstein was Johann the Good, who reigned for over 70 years, but nobody is touching Louis the 14th's record.
There's not a lot of, you know, when you rule in Liechtenstein, there's not a lot of sun damage, right? You're not going to die of,
not a lot of stress.
No. Why would you age? Right. It's you mountain air, clean mountain air.
If we think that, you know, border skirmishes and treaties are what age a ruler, Johann the Good of Liechtenstein is pretty insulated from any of that kind of,
in being sandwiched business. Between the Swiss and the Austrians, like
most, they can take care of you.
Everything's pretty well taken care of, right? There's not the mail's always going to arrive. It's no stress, really.
It's like being the Prime Minister of Canada, really.
Yeah,
you've got
easy job.
You've got American missiles. You can worry more about just having better health care and better designed postage stamps.
Yeah, yeah. It's a safe and comfortable position to be in.
Louis the 14th, of course, was
less safe and comfortable.
Yes, but wisely, you know, his 72 year rule is a time when France turned from a, you know, essentially a feudal kingdom into a centralized modern state, an absolute monarchy of the more modern variety. But he carefully preserved his power with a series of clever maneuvers, including, basically, by constructing Versailles, creating a gilded cage for his aristocracy.
Right, so they couldn't get out.
Right, so that all the nobility were right there under his control.
Fighting with each other over shoe buckles.
Squabbling over who got to sit closer to the suckling pig at dinner, or who got a nicer statue or fountain out in the garden or whatever it was.
Kind of like Trump has done with the Congress. Or one half of the Congress.
And all those wealthy car dealership owners that go to his Florida resorts. But this particular story of Louis the 14th, as we have already tipped off, has more to do with his lower regions than from his clever, noble brain.
Tipped off by the title of the episode, you mean?
Yes. I mean, we've already said this episode will have a royal anus in it, which is not a promise we...
Wait a minute, I don't remember saying that. Show. Oh, I said it right at the top, didn't I?
Yeah, or at the bottom, as it were.
Oof. This is going to be a lot, there's going to be a lot of poop puns.
I guess. Yeah. There's definitely the potential for them. We don't have to.
Okay, let's not.
We believe in free will.
I mean, I'm not going to make them.
I mean, so. I don't actually believe in free will, but, you know, the illusion of it might be sufficient to keep us from making every intestinal pun we think of.
Again, it's not going to be me that makes those puns.
That's your vow.
I mean, just
to the future listeners,
just my nature excludes punning.
You know, our culture, we think it, and it's not nearly universal, I think, to consider the excretory functions to be taboo and therefore in the right situations, hilarious. Do you think that's universal? Do you think animals even have a sense that they've done something?
Teehee.
My dog doesn't seem to.
No. Dogs, no. They have no shame.
My dog looks vulnerable while he's in the act, but then he just strides away, pleased as punch.
I mean, there's shame that I don't think is universal that makes it funny, but I think it's always funny in a lighter sense.
Even if you're proud of your poop, it could be funny.
Yeah, well, it's funny just because it's because it's a way that you can intrude upon others without actually touching them physically, right? Yeah, I'm sitting all the way over here, but I got you. I reached out and touched you.
I can't remember who it is, but somebody said they thought that the secret of poop jokes and pee jokes were that it allows us to simulate the shock and the taboo that comes with sexual humor without any actual sexuality, which has tricky emotional and interpersonal overlap that pooping rarely does, at least in as I practice it. I'm not German, but you know, there's it's more, you know, it has something of the private anatomical taboo without any of the sexual politics.
But it does seem licentious, right? Or libertine. I mean, if you think about
a really good bowel movement.
Imagine some Puritans sitting in severe prayer,
with tall hats.
Yeah, kneeling on a splintery board, and one of them farts. Are they going to giggle? No, they're incapable of giggling. It's against their religion.
They would simply execute that man.
Or do they? Would they have some take on it that, like, ah, the Lord has blessed us with, you know, the fact that you have released this pungent gas? I mean, what is the take where it isn't funny, but it isn't taboo? I guess any doctor is going to have to talk about it with a straight face. But is that an
argument for not entering the medical profession?
Yeah,
you can no longer enjoy. You can no longer enjoy poop and fart jokes?
Yeah, you can't pick your nose and eat it. There's so many things as a doctor you're probably, you lose, right?
There were really no, I mean, it's part of our story that the medical profession was very different in 1685, which is when on the morning of January the 15th, Louis the 14th or whoever is in charge of palpating every inch of his French corpus discovers.
This is early on in his reign?
No, in 1680. Yeah, well, I mean, comparatively, yes. It's in the 42nd year of his reign. He still has 30 more years on the throne.
Uh-huh.
And maybe as a result of spending so long on the throne, I mean, maybe that's some of his problem. Oh,
God, we talked about this.
A lump is discovered in a place you don't want a lump.
Uh-oh.
In his rear end.
Discovered how? Is he really 40 years into his reign getting massages that are such deep tissue that they're able to discover like a prolapse?
Well, there are royal doctors in charge of you know, keeping an eye on every part of the royal body and recommending the right lotion or unguent.
But he may have discovered it himself in his private time and then brought it to their attention.
It's quite possible. Okay. I mean, Louis's hygiene habits are a part of this story. The lump, which by February 18th is quite clearly...
Is it in your head?
An abscess. It's lump. It's lump. It's in his butt.
It's an abscess.
Yes. Ugh. And it's going to get worse. If you didn't like the word abscess, maybe this is not the omnibus for you.
Spoiler alert, get out.
By May the 2nd, the abscess is a fistula. We've had fistulae before on the show.
Yes, we have.
I'm not saying people were clamoring for more. But this is, against all odds, the second omnibus, the fistula of a historical import sufficient to become an omnibus.
Is it possible to have a spoiler alert that's so, that is so emphasized that one of the co-hosts could punch out of the episode?
Are you saying you would rather have fistula-free content?
I mean, I'm just wondering how long I can hang in here before...
It just occurred to me that both of the fistula shows have been mine. You have never brought fistula content to the table.
Not a one. As I'm going down my list, anyone that might have a fistula in it, I just X it off.
John
I
Roderick, send them to you. The John Roderick guarantee. Fistula-free podcasting for decades.
No anal ulcerations.
A fistula is just a, you know, it's a tissue that shouldn't be connected to the surface, becomes connected to the surface by a little tunnel.
No, wait a minute. Say that again.
In this case, so people,
there's an opening.
People like, we know there's an opening, but yeah. In this case, there's a second opening.
An additional opening.
In the opening. Humans, like other mammals, actually have anal glands. I have a little dog who likes to scoot himself around on the carpet sometimes when he gets plugged up back there. And I don't understand what's going on.
I've met the dog.
And I feel like our vet needs to be squeezing or palpating him more carefully to keep him from doing that because okay. I don't know what's happening.
I had a friend that had a dog that if you startled the dog, which I did one time, it would excrete a material at a great velocity.
This sounds like an alien.
But it wasn't, poo. It was this other stuff, this right. black tar that was, I mean, you could smell it across the lake. It was so pungent.
The interesting thing is that even though we don't have, you know, scent glands or back there the way a dog might, humans do have anal glands that are kind of just modified sweat glands, providing, I assume, whatever moisture and lubrication that part of you needs.
Hmm. Getting close to punching out here, but go on.
We're talking, not just about any anal gland, but this is about the royal anal glands of France. Yes. So have some respect, please.
I do.
In this case, one of His Majesty's glands has, you know, become connected to the surface of his crack by a passageway that should not exist.
And is he making ambergris out of it?
Yeah.
I mean, it should be.
Every morning they're harvesting the royal jelly from back there.
It should be used in perfumery.
From the royal crack. No, it's just, it's not that different from hemorrhoids. His Majesty had chronic constipation, apparently.
Okay.
He was reading Le Monde on the John,
mm-hmm.
the John, they call it there. And he pushed a little too hard, a little too much effort.
Ouch.
And not all exercise pays off.
Well, you know, see, this is one reason we can't tax the rich. They have problems just like the rest of us.
Not problems maybe we don't have. The idleness of the rich leads to longer bathroom sitting.
Yeah, he probably had...
He doesn't have a boss knocking on the door being like, that's 10 minutes. Get back here, barista.
He ate a lot of rich food, probably not a ton of roughage.
Right. He should have been eating more roughage. His doctors prescribe him all kinds of lotions back there to soothe the ache, and nothing works. It just keeps getting worse.
Lotion technology had not yet evolved to Neutrogena.
I mean... Honestly, I think lotion technology might have been closer to ours than most things at the time. They could probably make a smooth goo.
Yeah.
Certainly the king's anal glands were.
Sure.
I'm not saying that's what they would make it out of.
Smooth goo, great band name.
There were smooth goos back then, I can only assume. I mean, it was probably goose fat or something
you or I
would never rub back there. But
speak for yourself. I'm more German than you.
Yeah, I don't want to hear about, and I don't need to hear about your poultry hobbies. But nothing works. The king loves a good sit. You know, he sits on his throne all day, and that's painful. He can't ride, which is a huge part of his life.
Oh, sure, sure.
And it's excruciating whenever he has to attempt a number deux, if you know what I mean.
Anyone who knows what life is like or has ever lived knows that if your bottom hurts,
mm-hmm.
boy, it's going to affect a lot more than just activities that you think of as being bottom-focused.
It's the equivalent of the feet hurting on a waitress is the bottom hurting on a rich guy, right?
Yeah.
Like that's his number one priority. Ease in the saddle, his ease in the seat.
Number two priority too.
In this case.
Oh, that was me. I don't do that. Look what you've done to me.
I knew it was going to happen.
You ruined me.
I knew you would crack. At Versailles at this time, by the way, speaking of the king's bowel functions, there's a distinct lack of toilets.
Didn't they go in pots behind curtains? Isn't that the famous story? That's why they all wore so much perfume.
Yeah, the king and the queen had commodes, maybe, but that was really just a wooden shelf they could put their pot in before someone tossed it out the window for him, possibly hitting an out of favor mistress,
right,
or courtier of some kind. There's famous stories from here about Versailles just being filthy. The Horace Walpole comes from the British Crown and just complains about the smell there. Stories were present, and this is probably not ubiquitous, but it probably happened fairly often that people would just, you know, lacking access to, there's no nearby toilets, instead of wanting to run up to where their chamber pot was, they would just go in a corner. So the halls were full of poop. The gardens would smell like manure.
You know, the Romans had plumbing.
Elaborate. Oh, and the fountains here had plumbing. This is like they chose to put in the fountains instead of the toilets. You know, when Disneyland opened, they only had enough time to do drinking fountains or toilets.
Which do they choose?
What would you choose? Let's say you're Walt in this scenario. What should we do, Mr. Disney?
I would put in, I think, wow, drinking fountains or toilets. The thing is, if you don't have drinking fountains, you might not notice.
You could put in neither, and then you'd be fine.
But toilets, you're going to notice they're not being toilets.
Oh, I see. Yes.
Right? Whereas drinking fountains...
I thought you were saying if there were no drinking fountains, nobody would need to pee anyway, so you're good.
No, because you're selling Coke by the gallon.
That's the issue. In fact, that's what Walt decided. If there's no drinking fountains, people can drink Coke. But if there's no toilets, no Coke bottler on earth can help you with that.
Right.
In this case, though, they put in fountains, and the idea of plumbing for toilets seems to have escaped them. Right. And today we get lots of modern stories about how the church at this time, the clergy, were very anti-bathing. It was sinful to be naked. It was sinful to scrub away at the smelly parts.
Oh, interesting. That. Yeah, okay.
And then there is some tradition of this. There was a Pope Boniface who was anti-bathing. Many monasteries...
Never nude. He was a never nude.
He was a never nude. He wore his mitre everywhere. And there are some monasteries that would have strict, twice a year max on bathing. But that seemed to be... these are mostly just kind of mini cultures. A lot of the stuff about the past being smelly is overblown and maybe even a little classist. Because we have texts from comfortable literate people saying, boy, the peasants sure do smell. I bet they never even bathe.
But this is an example of the richest of the rich, right, being covered in poop.
And there were some cases like that. Apparently, like the legend about Isabella of Spain, Columbus's famous patron, is that she only bathed twice in her life, and one of them was the day of her birth.
And the other was her baptism?
Wedding day, I think. So, yeah, like literally half her baths of her life were to get placenta off her. Those things have been told about Louis as well, that he only, that he only bathed twice in his life.
I feel like such a sinner.
Because of all your bathing.
Yeah. I take 4 baths a week if I can.
I'm saying this is overhyped. Christianity became the dominant religion of the Roman Empire at a time when there was a huge bathing culture there.
Right.
And they existed hand in hand. There wasn't a lot of immediate, hey, what's going on in those bathhouses, let's cut that out.
I think we have a pretty good idea what was going on in those bathhouses.
Honestly, a lot of the clerical antipathy to bathing probably did come from, these are actually brothels.
Yeah, I've seen the frescoes.
You know what's going on in there. In Louis's time, a lot of the anti-hygiene sentiment was actually coming from scientists.
Sure.
Like, we can't always blame somebody in a mitre.
No, you can count on the scientists to never be wrong.
Because in this case, they're thinking, well, when you're bathing, you're naked, your pores are opening, and that's how the disease gets in.
Yes, right.
Nothing's a bigger concern at this point than how do we keep people from getting cholera and dysentery. And bathing seemed, to the scientific mind, as a time when the body would be vulnerable to that kind of stuff.
Well, and also if there's cholera in the water.
Yeah, they're not wrong. I mean, you can keep your mouth closed when you're playing with your little submarine.
I guess so, but can it get in? Can it get in through your under your fingernails? Cholera?
I don't know.
Probably not. Well, yeah, eventually it's going to find its way. You can't keep your mouth closed the whole time.
If you've got a little extra tunnel in your bum,
there it is.
Imagine Louis standing there with a towel and a duck, a rubber duck, and one of those comical long brushes that people in movies have before they get in. Do you bathe a lot? Do you have one of these comical long brushes?
I do, and you know why?
For your back.
No.
Oh.
I realized, here's a real thought technology.
It's for your Twitter photos of...
If you scrub your bathtub as the water is draining out, instead of like climbing out, if you stay in there and scrub it with a scrub brush and soap as the water's draining out, you never have to clean your bathtub because you're doing it when you're still like in that.
Is that the right time to do it too? Because it's still a wet film instead of a dried on.
Yeah, it's this liminal space between bath and not bath.
It seems cold though. I don't want to be in there when the water level is.
You can even have the shower on.
Oh,
what I'm saying is later when you go back to scrub the bathtub, it's this big ordeal. But if you're in the bathtub already and you have the brush and you have the soap, like it just feels this. I mean, this was a discovery and it has changed my life because I used to have to scrub the bathtub. It was no fun.
And now it has changed mine.
Now it's fun. It's, you know, my rubber ducky and I.
Except that like Louis the 14th, I never bathe. I don't know the last time I took a bath.
Oh, you're not a bather.
No. Huh. We have a showy old bathtub with feet, which I'm sure was great for the developer who was listing the house.
Yeah.
But which you would never in your life want to be in.
Are you kidding? Those are the best bathtubs because the cast iron holds the heat.
But the shape of it is not comfy.
Oh.
It's not contoured for my body.
Maybe I should come and take a bath at your house and just see.
Do you think that's true? Do you think you can make it work?
I had an old cast iron bathtub that came from an institution that was like meant to be filled with mud and cure consumption.
Mm-hmm.
And
nobody in there ever wanted to be in there?
Well, I did. You could let the water out of that. And you could lay there in the tub with no water for another hour, and the tub would still radiate enough heat that it was not cold.
Wow.
So I would just sit in there in a dry bathtub and just meditate.
And you've never had tuberculosis?
Not once.
As a result.
Haven't even gotten COVID as far as I know.
So being suspicious of nudity and bathing, doctors would often say, look,
is that why you don't take a bath? Suspiciousness of nudity and bathing?
I think showers are much, a shower is constantly poking and prodding at you. It's like a bath plus one of those airport massage chairs.
Which I would never sit in a billion years.
For hygiene reasons.
Yeah, an airport massage chair. It's like, yuck.
When I see people in those, I'm always thinking, what series of choices has led you to that place, so sir or madam?
Weird.
Or a mild electric shock. A shower is just like a bath plus a mild electric shock.
Oh, yeah, I can see that.
You don't
see that.
Do you never shower or do you only shower when you're in a hurry?
No, I shower at the end of a bath.
Oh, I see.
You take a bath.
It's a whole process.
Then you let the water out. You scrub the tub.
Here's a thought.
Turn the shower
Here's a thought technology for you, John. It's much shorter if you just go straight to the shower.
No. I mean, part of it is we live in the Northwest where water is abundant.
Yeah. We don't have to feel guilty.
No, you can just open up the taps and let it run out into the street.
Sometimes a salmon comes out. Of your faucet. So scientists at the time would think, you know, obviously, you know, this person can't bathe, but they would look at the linen shirts or linen underclothing coming off of an unbathed person, and they would see all the grime, and they would think, cloth draws out the dirt from the body.
Oh, cloth.
So you don't need to bathe.
Cloth draws it out.
You just put a clean shirt on. So that was what they would, I mean, it's not likely that somebody like Louis XIV never bathed, but it's more likely that instead of submerging himself in water like you do,
yeah,
and thinking about
that voodoo that
Soviet armaments, that he would just, every morning, people would come out and put a new linen smock on His Majesty and kind of maybe rub him down with some kind of alcohol or perfume and call it good.
Now, when you're at Jeopardy, they change your shirt. How many times when you are there for a recording day?
We do a week and a day. So I show up in, you know, a t-shirt, and then I have to change into a series of 5 dress shirts over the afternoon and then back into my t-shirt.
How many helpers do they give you to change shirts?
There are 64 women.
And each one has one shirt that's her responsibility?
No, it's one lovely wardrobe man who is in charge of the whole shebang.
But you don't shower or douse yourself in perfume or alcohol in between shirts.
No, because I've only been in it for 45 minutes. It has not drawn out any of my internal excrescences.
Is it hot under those lights? Do you perspire? Get flop sweat when you don't know how to pronounce a French word?
It's mostly cold. It's cold in there. Like by the end of the day when the... And I don't even know if they keep it cold or if just those big old buildings resist heat. I mean, by the end of the day, it's a normal temperature out there. And they climate control it so it doesn't get hot. But generally, I'm very happy to be in a wool suit. There is a shower in the dressing room, which has never been used. Like Alex did shows in on that stage since like 1994. So
never used the shower.
Yeah, 26 years probably that shower was never turned on. But it's still there, probably with some bar of Dial soap that was purchased sometime in the early 90s.
Oh, you should turn it on and see if the water comes out gold colored.
What color? Yeah. So, but despite all this, history does agree that Louis XIV did not smell great. His mistresses all said he had bad breath. Mm. There's a quote from a Russian ambassador saying, you know, you're ushered into the king's presence and it smells like a wild animal. Mm-hmm. So like not even a horse, like
a boar,
a panther or something. Yeah, exactly. And he would often, and he was aware of this. Oh. Maybe there was less stigma, or maybe if you're the king, you don't care, but he would just open a window, you know, when he noticed a room was getting pungent from him. So this is both the hygiene that's probably contributing to his illness and the kind of it helps you understand the level of scientific awareness that's going to go into its cure.
I bet having an anal fistula doesn't improve the smell.
No, absolutely not. The smell, it's a feedback loop. Mm-hmm. Bad smells give you butt problems, and butt problems give you bad smells. It's the circle of life. Back then, none of his doctors were interested in a surgical remedy because doctors didn't stoop to that sort of thing.
Surgery was a thing that you contracted out to the butcher.
A doctor was a scholar who would sit and think about the body and its humors and the best way to balance them all. Whereas the surgeon would just be a artisan, somebody who works with their hands.
Right.
A lofty doctor is not going to stoop to that. And surgery was off the table for the clergy, for the most part, ever since the Council of Tours in 1163 had specifically, I can't remember the Latin phrase, but it's basically like the church shrinks back from blood. Oh, like
that's not how I think of the church.
Yeah. Historically, I have some issues with that.
They reformed that by 1492.
Yeah. Like Inca blood specifically, they were okay with, I guess. But the idea was that there was something too bodily, too unwholesome for if a cleric or a monk or somebody was actually to start getting into bones and tissues.
I guess that was probably post-Charlemagne, too. So there was just a brief period around the Council of Tours where they were like, well, we're not going to behead or drown people anymore for a bit.
For a bit.
It's beneath us for a little bit. And then...
Are you implying that they would also do it as a bit? Like, just to be funny? Guess what happened to the Aztecs?
For my next trick.
So the clergy can't do it, but all these, you know, centers of learning, especially monasteries, had very strict haircut rules. You know, you had to have a very well-kept tonsure. Mm-hmm. Kind of the opposite of the John Roderick aesthetic right now.
I have gone to
the big curly beard hair in places where I don't even have places.
Yeah.
But back then the monks had to have a very strict haircutting regime. So there were always trained barbers, and you can see where I'm going with this.
Oh, barbers are also surgeons.
That's what I'm saying. If the doctors won't do surgery and the priests doctrinally, theologically cannot do surgery, nobody is left with a nice sharp blade except for the barber. Ah. So at these monasteries and other places, this is the origin of barber as surgeon. Which otherwise you would think would be a weird combination of jobs. You know, it's a SNL sketch, you know, of Steve Martin being a medieval doctor barber. I think that's the origin of the barber pole with the red and white stripes. It was
it's the pole that's part of the medical
crest. Like a caduceus or whatever. Yeah, right, I think those would actually be like
snakes.
Yeah, or blood, I think, like ribbons of blood, you know, representing what that barber gets up to back there.
Yeah.
So doctors would refuse to operate. They would say, well, call a barber. I'm busy thinking about the spirit and the tissues and the humors.
Yeah, the humors, right.
And Louis XIV's heroic barber in the story is one Charles Francois Felix. And the king calls in his barber and says, this is not getting any better. I can't sit down. We got to operate. As you can imagine, Charles Francois is reluctant.
Oh, I thought he would be thrilled.
You can see there'd be quite a bit of downside, right?
Oh, right. If he screw up in any way.
Yeah. If there's, you don't want to mess up on the royal bottom.
Yeah.
I mean, right. he would be, I mean, this is a king who might just behead him if he thought it wasn't healing well, or if it poked. I mean,
if he shaved his pubes in a weird way.
Exactly. In a weird shape, in a fleur-de-lis shape. This is a time when there's no antibiotics, no anesthesia. Like, this surgery is going to be one of the most unpleasant things King Louis will ever do. And
the only thing that would drive him to do it is that it is already so unpleasant.
Right. He has to.
Yeah.
But you're right. There is quite a bit of upside for Félix here. You know, he could also be the hero of all of France who saved the king's derriere. So he cagily thinks about it and says, I need 6 months.
Whoa.
I need...
That's a big ask.
Well...
Can you sit on your painful throne?
Can you sit on your big ask?
For 6 more months.
But the reason why he wants 6 months is he's not just putting him off. He wants to practice. And the king says, my galleys and prisons are open to you.
Oh, no.
And so that's exactly what happens.
Medical experimentation?
For the following 6 months, he rounds up... Over the next 6 months, he rounds up 75 men from the surrounding countryside, just... you know, debtors and peasants who don't get a vote, and just starts poking at their bottoms, which I'm sure is not the first time a palace has done this to the local serfs.
Are they 75 people who have filled out a form that says, I also have butt problems, or is it just like random people?
No, I think he just needs to start getting into butts.
I see. Healthy bottoms.
Yeah. And he doesn't have the time to go around and try to find hemorrhoids. I mean, maybe with 75 people, maybe he is in this time, he can find people with some
he lucked out.
Sores and swellings back there and think, this is going to be more like combat operation, more like the real thing here. But this guy's now seeing 3 to 4 butts a week, which is more than I've ever seen.
Oh, well.
You're a musician.
Yeah. When I was at the top of my rock game. 3 or 4 butts a week, sure.
And he's able to refine his technique over this time. It really from, this is a, you know, he's a barber. This is not somebody who's an expert on what's going on back there. So he's doing exploratory surgery. Oh, there.
I know some barbers that get up to a lot of mischief, Ken.
You know some barbers that know what's going on back there.
Have you ever
seen
the movie Shampoo?
So he's starting to understand the structure of things of that nature, things happening in that crack and where he's examined the king. So, you know, he's trying different techniques on what you would do. As you can imagine, not all of his guinea pigs survived.
Oh, that's unfortunate. It is. That's not a good way to die.
Lives are being sacrificed and it's probably not on the table. It's not bleeding out on the table. It's probably later infection. So it's pretty gory.
He does a thing and then he's like, thanks for your service. And they're like, wait a minute.
I'd do it today.
Ouch.
The Secret Service comes to your door and says, Mr. Jennings, the president's anus needs you.
The Secret Service comes to my door and says, Mr. Jennings, the president needs you?
Comes to one's door and says, your name here. The president's rectum needs you.
No. Times have changed.
Mr. Roderick, the president needs your anus.
No.
President Biden needs your rectum.
No, I did not join the Secret Service. I do not need to lay down my life for the president.
We have a different, this is an absolute monarchy. No, I mean, this is not, but in Versailles, you don't have a lot of options.
Right.
So over the 6 months, he not only refines his technique, but also his tools. He realizes he does not have the right tools for anal surgery. And who among us can say we do? Who among us is well-equipped for that?
Let me think. Do I have the right tools for anal surgery? I bet I could put together a toolkit.
Is this an emotional toolkit?
No, I mean, you know, I have some vintage surgical instruments.
You've got a big garage full of things.
And all these things.
And when you look at the things he used, they do very much look like syringes. Contraptions. They are, you can still see them on display in Versailles. He invents a retractor, which really does look like a medieval torture instrument, thick black iron clamp thing. But conversely, the scalpel he develops is
a modern scalpel.
No, but it's even better. It's curved. It's lithe and
it's like a
delicate,
like
almost
a scimitar,
feminine.
Huh?
Yeah, it is. The blade is long and curved in a very delicate way, and then it's got a long extending from the blade. It's got a long extension, maybe twice as long as the blade itself. A stiff probe. Hmm. So there's really, Louis will have no secrets.
We're
this is a scalpel that does it all.
Were barbers also making their own scissors? I mean, were they metallurgical? Were they blacksmiths too?
I doubt it, right? Like, that's the kind of thing where he's going to
have to partner with somebody.
Yeah, he's going to have to find a metal worker and draw a picture and say, here's the shape of His Majesty's fistula. Make me a blade that's this shape. Which, you know, too bad the metal worker's account has not survived.
Yeah.
The metallurgist.
He went to Wilkinson's sword and said, here's what I need.
And he's trying to make something shaped like the inside of the king's butt.
I'm picturing the king for 6 months going like, how's it going? How's it going?
Hey, did any more peasants die? No. Because I haven't seen Jean-Francois around lately. I think his mom is sick. But finally, Felix feels like he's got the tools and the know-how for the job. And at 7 a.m. on the morning of November 18th,
a day
1686,
live in infamy.
And this is 2 years, over 2 years, I think. Almost 2 years from the king first diagnosing problems back there.
Amazing that he didn't die of infection in this time.
Right, right. I guess whatever alcohol they're swabbing him down with works.
He has an open fistula this entire time, and it needs to...
And it must be infected if it's painful, right? I mean, that's not just...
And he needs to go to the bathroom every day, like we all do.
One would think.
Everybody poops. It's right there in the book. Wow. What an awful, awful scenario.
I was listening to a podcast recently. I don't want to name the show, but
please don't.
In their discussion, one of the co-hosts accidentally revealed that he was surprised that the other co-host, and these are like named celebrities. These aren't goofballs in a basement like us. He was surprised that the other person only pooped once a day. It was clear that he thought the correct number was much, much higher.
Did I ever tell you the story?
I think I would remember.
I was drinking at the Fish Inn in Northern Idaho, which is a bar shaped like a fish. It was, at least. I don't know if it's still there. And the person I was drinking with was a Catholic priest. And the priest at one, we were drinking red beer, which is a combination of beer and tomato juice.
A priest, a rabbi, and an indie rocker walk into a bar.
Which was a popular drink in Northern Idaho at the time.
Is that true? Beer, but not still?
I don't know. I haven't been to Northern Idaho in a while. And these days, I just go through Central Idaho. But then, Northern Idaho, all the time. Fish Inn. Look it up. It's probably still there. Or if not...
It's beautiful up there.
It's one of the things that America has lost. And I doubt if they even serve red beer anymore, because I don't think it's probably legal. But anyway, this priest said to me at one point, we were having a jolly old time, and he said, how many times a day do you make a BM, is what he said. I don't even know if I'd heard that phrase before, BM. I was like, I don't know. What's a BM? And he was like, I mean, how many times a day do you
make a big mistake?
and he said, how many times a day do you poop? And I was like, I don't know. Once?
Is this protected by the confessional? Is there priest penitent clergy if you tell a priest how often you poop?
I don't think so. Not at the Fish Inn. I think anything goes at the Fish Inn. And I said, once? And he was like, no, 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 no. And he proceeded to give me a real dressing down that I wasn't going poop what he considered to be the minimum, which was 3 times a day.
Well, if I needed to, I would.
No, you're not, Holy Father. You're not doing it right. Something's wrong if you don't poop in the morning, in the middle of the day, and then before bed.
I love this earthy Friar Tuck character wandering out of the forest to give you advice.
Well, and he was drunk too. I mean, that was the wonderful thing. We were like arm in arm. He was like, no, no, man, let me tell you how it's got to be. You got to poop more. And I've carried that with me all these years.
Is that what's kept you from organized religion?
Yeah. Well, no, not that. I've just been trying to live up to the expectations of this father who confided in me one of the truths. Because you had to assume he was getting that information from good authority.
St. Augustine?
Yeah, right. I mean, he's going back and living in a world where they only bathe once a year and have to keep their hair trimmed a certain way.
Not anymore.
Father Mulcahy
is extremely clean. He's my ideal of a 20th century Catholic.
Well, and these are Jesuits too, so they definitely had not, they did not sign up on the whole, like, don't spill any blood thing.
This guy's got a slide rule probably.
But I still think about that. Am I not pooping enough? And I think part of the problem was I'm not counting enough. Like when he asked me how many times.
Oh, you weren't sure?
I was like, I don't know. It's not a thing. I don't like
you don't
keep
have a routine?
Diary.
You don't have a routine?
I don't have a
routine. A time of day?
No, it's just I'm when
that's
when
because
I'm inspired.
You've never had a day job. I feel like people with a day job know because they're like, I don't want to use the work bathroom.
Oh, really?
The one on the third floor is often empty during lunch.
Oh, so they do it at a certain time every day.
Yeah. And I think many avoid, and I think many avoid 9 to 5. I sure did when I worked in an office.
Really? You didn't want to go to the bathroom at work?
I don't want to poop at work. I mean, I guess it's more time away from your desk.
Wow.
But you have to remember, this was before smartphones.
What does that change?
Pooping's gotten so much better.
In what way? Oh, because you can have, you can watch a video.
You can do the Wordle.
What's that? Oh, the Wordle. Oh, the Wordle, sure.
The Wordle seems like...
I was like, a Wordle?
It does. It does seem like something that would you'd have to see a proctologist about.
Wordle.
Doctor, when I've been pooping, I've been dealing with the Wordle.
He's the turtle on the Wordle.
Anyway, 3 hours under the knife.
Oh, wow.
I presume with the royal...
With the royal retractor.
In the air and the royal retractor opening up the glands and the royal scalpel... scooping things up.
And all the courtiers standing around.
There is a large group of people. The Dauphin is there. A priest is there in case, mm-hmm. you know, in case,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
But after 3 hours later, he closes him up and...
With stitches or...
The record does not reveal...
With a buckle?
But with a buckle. Velcro having not been invented. I think surgical sutures are very old.
Probably made of gut.
That's what I'm picturing here. And I could look this up in real time, but I'm not. This says the ancient Egyptians, Greeks, and Romans knew. So yeah, I'm going to assume he has sewing needle and what's the adjective of sewing? Is there a word for that? He's got expertise of a blank nature.
Of a...
tonsorial?
Yeah, well...
No, wait, that's hair.
It would be...
sartorial? That's fashion.
My daughter's grandmother is a seamstress. She's a
Is there a non-gendered way to say seamstress?
A seamer.
The seamy side of
a
the king.
A seam maker.
Anyway, the king has a seam at this point, is what I'm saying.
Good.
He looks like a football back there. And
Taylor.
Yeah, but that's still not an adjective.
Taylor. Is the verb. So yes. Taylor.
I just thought there would be a cool Latinate
adjective
meaning relating to sewing.
Tailored.
Tailor made. No, maybe there isn't one.
Is one for sure. And we're going to get a lot of letters.
80 people right now are sending an identical email and I want to thank you all individually. Let me just go to my inbox right now. Ping, 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 ping. It's blowing up. The bandages are soaked in burgundy wine, as befitting a bourbon monarch. And the recovery goes beautifully. I'm sure Felix is just, probably doesn't sleep for a week. But the king is able to sit comfortably within a month. He's back in the saddle in 3 months. And all goes well. Felix is awarded some kind of a low baronetcy or some kind of noble title.
Bespoken? Bespoke?
I mean, that's an adjective for the garment, but not for the practice, right?
Bespokery?
Yeah, bespokery. I'm sure that's it. Like the way you would say culinary for cooking.
Yeah.
What is the equivalent word for sewing?
Maybe
we've discovered English doesn't have one, and it's time to make one.
There's got to be a word.
So there are various effects of the king's rear-end brush with death, or at least with pain and sickness. The first is that, and this is the kind of thing that seems like it's a little overhyped by history, is that fistulas become fashionable at court.
Oh, you're kidding.
Isn't that what you would imagine happening at Versailles?
Thing. Oh, yeah. My butt hurts too.
So everybody's talking about how butthurt they are. Oh, I think I might have a pang in the...
Such a modern thing.
In the defecatory regions.
There's nothing new under the
Dauphin.
Sun. Butt-hurtedness is
There's nothing
is
new
ancient.
Under nothing new under the pants.
Under the bun.
There we go. See, you're getting into
God,
it.
God, I hate it.
You're into the spirit of the
I
thing now.
I hate it.
In fact, it gets to the degree that rear-end problems, hemorrhoids become so fashionable. It's not just people bragging about them. People actually begin, sycophants begin bandaging themselves back there and kind of flamboyantly showing up at court with visible bandages. on their behind.
Wow. But their outfits are so outrageous already. How do you add
bandages? Are they putting the bandages over the bustle? It's really hard to imagine. But there are actually two historical effects of greater interest, one of which is certain, the other of which is possibly apocryphal. But I choose to believe both because they're very good stories. Number one, this really changes the prestige of surgery.
Oh.
Looked upon as kind of a brutal, barbaric thing, unfit for higher minds. Once it saved the king's life, suddenly people have to grapple with the fact that, well, it might be messy, but people are going to live longer if we do this. I might live longer if we get good at this.
Well, and everybody loves fancy tools, too. Up until that point, surgery was just lopping off people's gangrenous foot.
Exactly.
But now it's a fancy little thing that involves a whole, like, works.
Yeah, I wonder if maybe there were no beautiful scalpels back then.
A beautiful scalpel goes a long way.
Louis's son, Louis XV, creates the Royal Academy of Surgery, putting the practice of surgery on a academic par equivalent with any other part of medicine. A portrait is hung of the very first royal surgeon of France, Charles Francois Félix. And this changes the course of history. The day of the dabbling barber is over. If you've ever had an ingrown toenail or, I don't think you've ever had a toe amputated. I know I haven't. But if you've ever had any kind of surgery of that nature, you owe something to
Dr.
Félix and King Louis. I used
to perform foot surgery on myself all the time.
Bunions?
In 1980, what would it have been? 89, I stepped on a pull tab from a pop can in Morocco. And
that's a good way to get tetanus, I bet.
Yeah, it cut into my foot deeply. What I was doing walking around barefoot in Morocco, I don't even remember. But
it's the first paragraph of a Paul Bowles story.
And I had to keep, there wasn't anything I could do. I was traveling. I only had these little pointy-toed slippers that I bought in Fez. I didn't even have normal shoes.
You were walking around with big curled
Toes with little tassels.
Like an elf or a sultan.
So I was always bleeding in the shoes. I still have the shoes. They're still all, basically it was a form of leather tanning. But what happened was I got all this dirt and gravel up in the wound, and then it healed over.
Oh no.
And so for years after,
you clunked when you took a step.
Well, every once in a while my body would get a sore on my foot, and it would expel some Moroccan dirt over the course of like weeks of like my foot in pain and kind of inflamed. Then some mud would come out from Morocco from 2 years prior. And so I got in the habit of actually, having a little scalpel and,
the sole of your foot is one part of your body. You can do that because it's the nerve endings, it's the skin is tough and calloused enough that you kind of feel like, I can whack away here. Let's see what happens.
Yeah. It wasn't on the soft part of the foot.
I'm not going to hit an artery or something.
It was some calloused part. And so, but it was gruesome work sometimes because it was always, the foot was always hurting in the first place. And then I'm in there with a knife like, arr.
And I just realized you cut your own hair. You are the last amateur barber surgeon.
I do. I'm a barber surgeon. And I want to add that to my business card in addition to all the other great things.
John Roderick, barber surgeon, King Neptune number 68. Unless that was from the part of the show we cut out. I can't remember. The other effect of Louis the 14th's anal surgery.
This is the truer or the less true?
No, the one about the prestige of surgery is absolutely true, and it's a legacy that continues today. Anytime you get minor surgery, you can think of King the Sun King's rectum, where the sun never shone. However, this is the one that may be apocryphal. In an 1834 memoir, a story is related by the Marquise de Crequy, one of the more popular and celebrated salon keepers of the time. How noble women of the time would have artists and musicians and thinkers over, all the best people over. And so in her memoir of her sparkling life in the upper class, she relates this story. Not 20 or 30 miles from Versailles at the time was a girls' school run by a Madame de Brinon, who was had heard, you know, the word of the king's discomfort and upcoming procedure had spread throughout the land.
Right.
Apparently, he did not keep it under his hat or under his bustle. And
how could you resist not telling your neighbor? Listen, don't tell anyone.
He's an old kvetching guy at a deli now. Mm-hmm. And so the word gets around that His Majesty is suffering. And Madame de Brinon decides that at her girls' school, I'm imagining a bunch of little Madelines in uniforms, they are all the orphans or whoever are going to say a prayer to wish His Majesty well every day as part of their, you know, their equivalent of their Pledge of Allegiance, I guess. Mm-hmm. So she writes up a little poem prayer that the girls say every day, wishing health and recovery and long life to His Majesty. And later, after his recovery, this poem reaches the attention of the court musician. Louis's court was also a great center of the arts. You know, he was a patron of Molière, and his greatest composer was Jean-Baptiste Lully. And so Lully hears this poem and sets it to music, and it becomes kind of a...
House of the Rising Sun.
And this song gets played whenever, you know, it's kind of a welcoming song to His Majesty, to just to honor him. And according to the Marquise de Créqui's story, somehow this gets to England, either when James II is in exile there during the, what do you call it, the before the Restoration, during the English Civil War.
The Regnum.
During the interregnum. Or possibly a composer like Handel, coming from the continent, brings it to England.
But I see where this is going.
Her story is that the British do not know that every time they sing God Save the King or Today Queen, they are parroting a song that was composed for the royal rectum of the Bourbons and wishing the king better butt health. And now every time God Save the King is sung, it's unconsciously with that historical legacy.
That puts a whole new spin on the Platinum Jubilee. And that concludes The Royal Anus of Louis XIV, entry 1086.2CH2118, certificate number 52937, in the omnibus. Futurelings, in the unlikely event that social media still exists in your era, please share your photographs of your own anal fistulas.
Fistulae
at Omnibus Project. And then Ken will take the best fistulae photos and retweet them at Ken Jennings.
I will be the judge. Yeah. I will choose one lucky fistula, mm-hmm, and send it out to my countless followers.
Or you can send it to me at John Roderick, and I will maybe see it in 6 months.
John will
log on there and look.
You keep a private file of
butt shots
of people's hemorrhoids.
If you want to send me shots of your butt that aren't infected, you could definitely DM me at John Roderick.
Slide into his BMs.
You can email us at theomnibusproject@gmail.com and send those photos to Ken, and they'll be read by Mindy and then forwarded to me.
I think I read most of the stuff before Mindy. Oh, but good. Because you say that, people have started to send email being like, hey, Ken, or actually probably Mindy, hey, could you send this, Mindy, to Ken and John?
If you'd like to just write Mindy, you can at theomnibusproject@gmail.com.
Yeah, find out what she's up to.
You can share your fistulae photos at Omnibus Futurelings, but I think the self-moderated quality of most Futurelings groups on Facebook and other places, they will shut you down fast if you start monkeying around with butt shots.
You start posting surgical photos.
I mean, the right kind of surgical photos, I think, will you would gather their acclaim, but the wrong kind, I mean, you have to go onto the sites and become a futureling and learn what the mores are, the cultural
mores. I don't think
mores.
There's any kind of surgical photo I want. Do you watch, like, televised surgeries?
I don't like gore.
Yeah.
And I don't like gross things.
Well, I have some bad news for you about surgical photos.
It's very hard for me to be on this show with you sometimes. Yeah, no, I that whole era in the early 90s where like vivisection photographs and medical anomalies were really popular in alternative rock culture, like punk rock sort of autopsy photos and research books about body mutilation.
You never had fetal pigs on your album covers?
Not into it. I wasn't into it then. Because you know what, Ken? I was never that edgy. I was never that edgy. No. Even now, not that edgy.
How about a nice watercolor of a sunset?
That's what I like.
Is there anything wrong with that?
You know,
not in my book.
Painting should be of ships and horses.
How about both?
Ships and horses.
Horses
there it is.
On ships.
But you can, if you have interesting things to send us, you can send them to P.O. Box 55744, Shoreline, Washington, 98155. Ken, do you have any postcards we've gotten recently?
There's a couple postcards. Amy, have we seen this before? Amy sent us a postcard from Fort Knox. She was in Louisville, and there was an omnibus about Fort Knox.
Thanks, Amy.
And, oh, here's a holiday card from Sonia, and it looks like her dogs.
Hey, Sonia, and dogs.
Running down some of the highlights of her 2021. She saw Weezer. She was at the...
I don't know whether to congratulate her or send her my condolences. Depends on which Weezer concert we're talking about.
She was at the 13th Annual Badminton Championship of the Universe, which I presume is not at a Weezer concert. This must have been a separate event.
That feels like the World Series, which doesn't accurately reflect the whole world, but just the United States, Japan, and Central America.
You don't think this was an interplanetary badminton meet?
Think about all the badminton players in the
Alpha Centauri,
the Kuiper Belt.
She went to 30 in-person trivia nights and had one quadrilateral contusion. I don't know what that is, but I hope you're on the mend, Sonia. Thank you for sending your postcards.
And please, if you can, support the show at patreon.com/omnibus. Your contributions help us keep the lights on here at Omnibus Bunker.
If you've made it this far in an hour-long podcast about hemorrhoids, you are exactly the kind of person whose support we are counting upon.
That's right.
Listeners, from our vantage point in your distant past, we have no idea how long our civilization survived. We hope and pray that the catastrophe we fear may never come, but the worst comes soon, this recording, like all our recordings, maybe are fine. But if Providence allows, we hope to be back with you soon for another entry in the Omnibus.